moment. Hello, test. 1, 2, 3. Hello, test. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, test. Staten Island is coming in clear. We're reaching Keypac, New Jersey now, clearly. Hello, test. Once again, that magic moment has arrived. When man's eternal desire to communicate with his fellow man is finally consummated with the applause of thunderous millions. You know, I think a lot of people are missing the point of the silent majority. I think the essence of the silent majority is that they are silent. They keep confusing them with the far right. No, I'm serious. I saw a movie. It was supposed to be about the silent majority, you know. And it's not about the silent majority. It's about the far right radical, which I suppose a lot of people in their mind confuse. Yeah, have you noticed that confusion, Matt? You haven't. Well, by George, where have you been living in the last 120 years? No, I don't think this. The one thing I think about the silent majority is that, the key word is silent. They don't think anything about anything. So they're not hollering about homosexuals. They're not hollering about campus, right? Nothing. They're just walking around paying insurance premiums. You know, hey, by the way, I have discovered a new thing that I'm always looking forward to seeing anytime it shows up on television. You know, the one that says, Mamma Mia! Now, I call those spicy meatballs. You know, that one kind of guy. He's got that great look on his face, and he says, Mamma Mia, this is what I call the spicy meatballs. He's fluffing. And finally, he gets it great. You know, he says, Mamma Mia, this is a spicy meatball. Bang! The stove falls. Now, you know, I'll tell you why that is such a... Maybe that commercial is funnier to a guy who's done a lot of commercials than to anybody. You know, the people who just watch commercials. Because I want to tell you this. One time, and I spent 3 hellish days, and I mean really hellish days, in a hot studio, and we were doing 1 56-second commercial. Now, you would, you know, 56 seconds, that goes so quick on the screen. It looks like they're having so much fun, you know, they're running around and holding up the product, and the voices singing and all that. So it sounds so great. Well, this 56 seconds will rank with probably some of the most hellish moments I've ever spent in my life. I mean, you know, when it's all said and done, and Shepard is looking back over the rotten times of his life, this miserable 56 seconds, which came off so groovy on the screen, or at least it came off on the screen. I'm not saying it came off groovy. It came off on the screen. And it went over and over and over and over and over to the point it got so that not only could I not stand the product, and you know that great look on that guy's face when he's eating the meatballs and he's got this look on the face like he can't stand them anymore. After all, it is an Alka-Seltzer spot, isn't it? And he says, Mamma Mia, that's what I call a spicy meatball. And he takes it, he's been eating it for 3 days, you know, in the spot. Well, this particular commercial had to do with, strangely enough, and I'm not even going to tell you the product because you probably saw the commercial, but it had to do with an Italian food product. You know, it was Italian. It was it wasn't spicy meatball. No, but it started out, it was going to be fun. See, all of us came into the studio. We were bright and cheerful and happy and groovy. And everybody says, oh, now let's have fun, gang. What do you say? All right, let's start from the top. And the chorus started to sing. And the Shepherd is in the booth. And the beautiful images of this product are being flashed on the screen to inspire us. But there was a line of guys sitting off to the left in the studio. And they were the sponsor. And they sat like banshees. Not only, well, more like a Greek chorus. And we did the first run-through. And the director said, and you hear the PA system comes out. You know how you always hear the PA system in these commercials?
Oh, it was really great. Now, if we can do it again, once again like that, we've got it wrapped up first. Hey, that was fantastic.
And it was. It was fantastic. Just on a run-through. We went through this thing just for kicks. It wasn't recording it, so we just find out where we are, as they always say. So it went off groovy. The first, oh, fantastic. In fact, what was so eerie about it was that they had this great big clock in the studio. So a tremendous clock, so you know exactly where you are, time-wise, as the boys say, second-wise. It was a 56-second commercial, and it was exactly 56 seconds, which is, you know, that's like an impossible thing. And here it was. So everybody says, oh, this is going to be fantastic. So we're all set now. The lights go dim. The director's sitting up in the booth up there, and he presses a button, and everything beeps. Lights go pop, pop, pop. Boop, 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 boop. 9, 8, 6, 7, 4. You know, film is going by. This is voiceover and a whole bit, see. And on comes the product. And on comes this gigantic shot in full color of the product, which always, incidentally, is mentioned around studios with a kind of religious quality. You don't laugh at the product. I don't care what it is, you know. If it's Johnny Mop, you don't laugh. The product. And Shepard just opens his mouth and he says, say, when all of a sudden you hear, there's a hum in the earphones, see? Something's going on with the equipment. The director says, oh, hold it, hold it, hold it, hold it, hold it, hold it,
hold on there, hold it there. Hey, just a minute, let's go back to the top. What's the trouble here, Charlie? Where'd you find that?
So then the engineer opens up the control board, and he starts fooling around. We're all sitting, see? And he calls in another guy from the next studio who comes in with a volt ohm meter. That's bad news, you know. I know something about electronics. So I said, oh, my God, no. So they're all messed around. The next thing I know, the guy goes out and he's got a soldering iron going. Now I know we're in trouble, see? Well, it started out so bright and clear, so much fun, see? We all appeared at 9 o'clock in the morning. They had the coffee there and the Danish. Everybody was, you know, ready to go. It is now roughly 10:30. And the first engineer leaves the studio. The second engineer takes over because of some kind of union thing. And they've gotten everything soldered. Everything's all ready to go. They've run tests. Now we're set to go. So the director says,
all right now, kids, now let's have fun. Let's just run right through it. Let's not let this get out of the skin here. Let's just run right through it, pull it loose, and have fun. All right, let's start at the top now. Are you ready over there, Fred?
Fred is the head of the chorus. See, there was a chorus. There was about five girls. You know, I wonder how many of you know about these choruses that sing these things behind the commercials, you know, the ones that sing, you know, that's right, that's right, that's right. You know, the ones that go there. Well, this is a commercial world in itself. The people who play in these choruses, they never do anything else other than that. And they're usually little fat girls, big, tall, skinny guys with bad skin. But, boy, can they sing commercial jingles. And so they're standing over there looking real bored. They've gone through this. This is their life, see. So he says, all right, Fred, let's go. All set now. All right now. Go. Roll it. All right, Chuck. Bring up the sound. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. 3 seconds. And here we go. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. The product comes on the screen, and all of a sudden it goes. The film broke. And then you hear a lot of talk in the intercom. He's talking now to the guy that's on the film chain, which is like 7 stories away from us someplace. I don't know where they were feeding this film, but I never did see that.
Oh, what's that going up there? Oh, yeah? No kidding. Oh, I'll be damned. Listen, kids, take 10. Take 10. We're going to have a little problem here. Just take 10. Relax and have fun. Really? All right. Call back when you got it fixed.
And I'm looking at the script. See, by now, the script is beginning to be meaningless. You know, when you first look, have you ever taken a page of any kind of a book? You know, when you first read it, it looks great. Have you ever tried to read something over and over again to find it means it's total gibberish? You know, it says, the cat walked over to the tree. At first, you say, oh, yeah, I see it. A cat walked over the tree. Second time you read it, the cat walked over to the tree. Tree, tree. What's a tree? Oh yeah, tree. Yeah, you would read. And by the fourth reading, you can't remember what a cat is or a tree, and what's worse, you don't care. You do not care. Finally, after the lunch break, if you're curious, where we all went down to this place and sat around and had pastrami, we came back up again. It is now 2:00 in the afternoon. We have not gotten one syllable on the tape, but we're all going to have fun. So he says, all right, let's go. Oh, set, really. This thing, let's get this thing by 3:00. What do you say? It's 2:00. We ought to have this thing ramped up by 3:00. At 5:30, we are mired in a gigantic argument over whether you say it delicious or delicious. And one guy in the client says it's delicious. I wanted to hear that. See, I want to hear that. I see you. And I said, oh, come on, you say delicious. And then we got into an argument over whether we should say mozzarella or mozzarella. I said, well, you know, it's a mozzarella, isn't it? He says, yes, it's a mozzarella, but the people in the A&P, they think it's mozzarella. You say mozzarella. And I said, well, I'm going to sound like a slob if I say mozzarella. He says, well, that's what I want. I want a mozzarella. Oh, my God. So that argument went on. Three guys finally got up, walked out, went back to the agency. One guy was crying. He was the writer of the script. And so at 6 o'clock that evening, finally the recording studio was shutting down. They had to leave, you see. The engineers were going home, the whole bit. All right, we'll meet tomorrow at 9. We'll sleep on it, gang. We'll take it back to the shop. We'll cook it over a little bit. And tomorrow morning at 9, we'll get a good, fresh start. Right? Right. So we walked down 48th Street in our own separate ways. My head, it was filled with mozzarella. So by 8:30 the next morning, I had forgotten the day before. I say, well, sort of. I had kind of erased it. I said, let's get a good clean start. Don't think of yesterday, Shepherd. By 10:15, we are embroiled in an argument, the like of which I've rarely seen in a studio. Six people showed up from the agency whom I'd never seen before, and now they were arguing about color in the film, something we had not even discussed up to this point. And one guy kept saying, but that's too yellow. It's too yellow. And the director's head is down on the lectern. He said, but it's already shot. We shot it 2 months ago. Why didn't you say it 2 months ago? He said, well, I was out of town. You didn't call me in to see the damn film. What are we going to do? It's too yellow. If I saw it on the screen, I'd puke. That's what I'd do. I'd puke. And with that, the director says, well, puke then. Damn it, puke. I'm puke. And he walked out. Well, by 2:30, another director has been brought in, a little bright-eyed guy who looked a little bit like a debauched Woody Allen. And obviously, he sees this as his big moment. So he gets behind the lectern, and he says, all right, now, look, fellas, I don't know what happened between you and Buddy, but it's all okay now. We've got it all straightened out. We've had a long talk at the agency, and we're going to start from the top. Now, let's have fun. Let's roll it now. I've just been looking at the script. In fact, you know, I was in on the first meetings about this this product. I know all about it, so let's go. I don't have to tell you, do I? I don't want to rub salt into the wound. And so finally, by 6 o'clock that night, we were all on the verge of a fistfight. 8 o'clock the next morning, Shepherd shows up at the studio 1 hour early. See, I figure if I get there and relax in the studio for an hour, it won't be so bad. I'm sitting there trying to relax when I hear coming down the steps to the studio. Get this. It is now 8:45. I hear these voices outside. Well, you're not going to get me to do that. I'm going to walk out on this damn account. Before we even start, they're fighting. Well, we finally... And all the while, of course, as Matt knows, in the control room, you can imagine what the engineering costs are getting to be on this, you know. The engineer... The studio is costing roughly $12,000 an hour. You know, it's one of these big recording studios with film chains and all that stuff. We have probably spent roughly half of what Daryl Zanuck spent making Gone with the Wind. And we haven't got one lousy, miserable second yet on tape. Well, finally, after more argument all morning, false starts, by this time I'm reading the stuff by rote. I don't care. I want to get out of this thing. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the director finally says this, incidentally the third director now, the chief director from the agency's here, a big fat guy with a beard, tough. He finally says at 3 o'clock, all right, you guys want to get a commercial on the air tomorrow afternoon or not? Dead silence. Everybody sitting there, including the sponsors, in their black suits. I said, okay, we're going to cut this spot now. We are going to cut it in 5 minutes. And if we don't cut it, I'm going to walk out of here, and we're not going to have any commercial. All the actors are going to be paid. That's the end of it. There will be no commercial. Now, you ready to start? It's a beautiful atmosphere. And then he said, all right, now let's start at the top. Have fun. Have fun. So everything worked. He said, 9, 8, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And the chorus started to sing, pizza, 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 la-da-da. That was the opening theme. It was about pizzas. And Shepard comes in, and we doggedly, our little band, our little group, doggedly struggles our way through the 56 seconds. And the director got up. I mean, it was about as uninspired a performance as you could imagine. He got it. All right, that's it. Wrap it up. Walked out. End of the scene. 3 days of total hell. And every time that commercial showed up on the screen, and it did, it was all over the dial for our TVs. Every time that thing showed up, wherever I was, I'd sit there, you know, oh, God. It would go through me, you know, it's like seeing a film of your own accident over and over and over. That reminds me, this is WOR New York. And speaking of over and over again, and among other things, we got with us here tonight the great Shanghai. You know, one of the great things about the great Shanghai, they never call up about their commercials. In fact, I don't even know if there still is a great Shanghai, actually. I'm serious. But when I did know there was a great Shanghai, I can only point out to you that it was a groovy place to eat, I'll tell you. And they're up at 103rd and Broadway. Yeah, oh, sometimes, you know, commercials are flywheel effect. You know, an agency will make a big buy, and a commercial will run for like 3 or 4 years after the product is off the market. I've seen that happen many times, you know, non-existent products. But nevertheless, I can assure you there is a great Shanghai. It's at 103rd and Broadway. It is not mythical. And they do have a Chinese Sunday brunch, which is fantastic. From 11:30 until 3, for just $2.50, you can eat all the Chinese stuff you want. And nobody's going to say, there's no time limit, you know. I think is interesting about it, if they put a time limit on each guy's eating, you know. But nevertheless, you can come in there at 11, eat till 3, and then leave. If you're a kid under 4 feet tall, it's half price. And the food is good. It's the Great Shanghai, and they're open Sunday, 103rd and Broadway. In fact, they're open 7 days a week. Great Shanghai.
Fall is a feast in the Poconos, especially at Fawn Lake Forest for the Lee Festival of Color. Every weekend this month, we're having our Oktoberfest with 10 sumptuous weekend cookouts, swimming in our indoor clubhouse swimming pool, lots of prizes and games for the kids, boat rides too, and our own Oompa Brass Band to entertain you. So come on over to Fawn Lake Forest, one of the most beautiful year-round family recreational communities in the Poconos. Have a great day on us this weekend at our Oktoberfest. We're on Route 590 in Rollins, Pennsylvania. Give us a jingle so we'll know when you're coming. And so Buck can reserve a pumpkin for you. Fawn Lake Forest. Call 297-3652.
Yeah, the area code is 212. It's an open housing community, and they will send you an offering statement. It's available from the subdivider on request. Filing with New York Department of State is not approval of the merits of the offering. Area code 212. May I, Matt, please, you know, I don't know how I got started in this whole commercial thing, but every time I see that commercial, you know, that Mamma Mia, that's what I call a spicy meatball, I think, oh, that poor guy. Listen, did I ever tell you about the time I went through the shirt commercial? Did I ever tell you about that one? Well, I one time did a shirt commercial. Now, you've seen shirt commercials on the air, you know, where they talk about body shirts, and they make a whole big issue of how the shirts are cut and so on. Well, you know, I'm not quite how to approach this, but let's put it this way. Has it ever occurred to you that nobody can ever conceivably have a shirt as smooth and beautiful and nice and fantastically fitting as the shirts you see in the commercials? You know how it is, Matt. You got your belt, and you stick your shirt in and all that stuff. Tighten your belt, and there it is. It sort of blouses out. And well, you notice it doesn't do that with those models. You notice that? Well, I was called to do a shirt commercial. And for 3 days, these things all seem to run a course of about 3 days. See, what you didn't see about that spicy meatball man is that for 3 days he was doing that spicy meatball bit. Well, here it is at the third day, and every time they would try to shoot the commercial, I've got this shirt on, see, and the shirts, which they brought in a great big case of shirts. Now, I wondered at the first, this is the first shirt commercial I've had, see, I wondered why they brought in a case of shirts. I mean, there were like 25 shirts in this big box, see? All the same kind of shirts. I said, well, here, a case of shirts, all right, see? So I'm all ready for the morning shooting, and this was in a studio over on, I believe it was on 14th Street, a big film studio. And the guy takes, I've got my shirt off, see? Now, I'm putting on the shirt. So very carefully, I put my arms out. Now, I'm not even allowed to put the shirt on myself, you see. You put your arms down behind you, and they have three guys that work on this, the dressers, see. They pull the shirt up very carefully over my arms. All the while, I'm standing stiff, you see, like my arms are made out of concrete. And they pull the shirt up, and these three guys are working there, trying to button the collar. They button this collar very carefully, and they button all the buttons. And now, they attach like weights to you. Have you ever wondered why these guys' shirt tails look so groovy? Well, they put weights on the bottom of those things, see, which are pulled down as tight like you're, like, well, it's almost like you're stretching a drum head or something. Three guys, one guy pulling in the back, two guys pulling in the front. This thing is stretched down over you, and then it's attached to your leg with tape. You stand. And very carefully, then, they pull your pants, they do, you don't do anything. They pull your pants up, and they tighten your belt very carefully so there's not a wrinkle at all. Here it looks like the shirt is sprayed on you. And then the guy stands back and says, all right, now, what I want is a casual pose. And you're standing, you know, casual pose. You move slightly. They go, oh, hold it. There's a wrinkle. Whoa, hold it there. Look at what you're doing under your armpit. Look at that. You look nothing, see? Hold it. All right. Let's go. Let's start from the top again. And then they down go the pants, then they start pulling again, see? And then after the third time of this scene, you know, you don't see these things in the end. After about the third, finally one guy says, all right, change shirts. He's beginning to sweat. This is the guy in the control room. Off comes the shirt, on comes another one. Now, in the meantime, they have sprayed you from head to foot with some kind of deodorant and also some kind of a depilatory, see, so, or whatever it is, with the stuff that stops from sweating, you know. They just rub it all over you because they don't want you to sweat, see, because, you know, so they put this stuff, back it goes, we start all over again. I'm standing like this. Now the girl comes out. There was a girl involved in this thing. They go through the routine with the girl, see, and this is an outfit that makes men's shirts and women's shirts in the same style, see, sort of unisex thing, see. So they start with this chick. Well, they're pulling this thing, and I'm standing. I'm supposed to stand. Don't move. Just hold it there. Wait till we get the Ermengarde here, whatever her name is. We'll get her set. And so the guys are working. They're pulling the shirt down. They've got her skirt half pulled down. They're pulling it down. She's standing with her bazoon sticking out. So they finally get her all set, and we're both of us standing like this. We're looking like we've been stuffed. You know, we're in a museum. We're standing, and they bring the set down behind us, which is on a big roller. You know, it's like a cyclorama. Down comes the set, and it's a beautiful farm scene behind us. Now, you've seen these ads in, you know, the New York Times men's clothing issue, and all the guys are leaning against the fence or something. So I stand there as casual as I can. She stands casually like this. And we're all set to do the commercial. Now, I'm supposed to say something. I don't know what it is. And she's supposed to have music behind us. See? And I notice, I look over there, and I notice her nose is sweating. And I know they're going to call it, see? And so I'm trying to remember my lines, and all I can see is this big glob of swimming on this chick. Incidentally, this girl is like a $12,000 a minute model. You know her name. She's famous. Big glob of sweat is coming right down between her eyeballs, see? And it's running down her nose like on a ski slope. And I'm watching it, see? All of a sudden, the director in the control room says, Shepard, what are you looking at? You're supposed to be looking into her eyes with a soulful look. What are you looking at? Now, come on. Let's get with it. Well, I said, let's start for the towel. Okay, let's go again. So the film starts rolling, and I start saying, and by this time, the sweat blob is now down right in the middle of the scene. She's looking at me like she's petrified. See, this, the thing about these models is that they are petrified, many of them. So this glob of sweat is coming down. I get just about to the key point of my copy when it goes, it just drops off, and you can see it flashing in the lights. Cut! What was that? Shepard, will you stop spitting when you talk? You know, I'm a gentleman. I'm not going to say, look, she's sweating all over the copy, you know. So we start out again. Well, by this time, see, the girl, I noticed then. Now, this is another thing that happens in these crazy spots. And my shirts are all tight like a drum, and I can't even breathe. You see, if you breathe too much, then you put wrinkles in it, so I'm standing stiff. So I start saying my copy, which is to say it's a beautiful blah, 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 blah. Then I notice another thing. She's got contact lenses on. I just noticed it, see? And they keep going around. They're drifting around in her eyes like two little plastic plates drifting around on this liquid sea, see? And I couldn't concentrate. I kept seeing the left one keeps going down like that. And I want to say, oh, you know, you poor.
Shepard, will you concentrate? What are you saying to her? You're supposed to be in love with her. All right, now let's start from the top, and I want love. Say it to yourself, love. I love that girl. Okay? I love that girl. Say it to yourself, love.
We started out again. Well, by that time, I felt a big glob of sweat running down my thorax. Inside, and I knew it was going to do it. Sure enough, it spreads all over my gut. We cut. 3 days later, Shepard finally finishes the spot with the famous model. She doesn't care. She's getting $90 a minute. You know, these chicks, she doesn't get. She goes right on to the next one. And I'm so sick of these shirts. You know, to this day, you rarely see me wear a tie, right? That's when I stopped wearing ties. That's when I stopped getting things, you know, buttoned up to the top. I can't stand it. Because it's all part of a psychological hang-up that has to do with this commercial. And to give you the final irony of this stuff, you know, a lot of people don't know about the inside of the commercial world. It's a very interesting world. There was a kid that appeared in... We did two versions of the same commercial, and one of them involved a kid. And he was supposed to be one of these cute little ad kids, you know, he comes running in. He's supposed to have tomato stuff all over his jumper. It was a bit that involved a washing machine. And, you know the one with, hey, look at that, look what you've done to your, look at that, oh, gee whiz. And the mother says, don't worry, this is the new Fig Newton fabric with the X-22, the new dirt out ingredient that automatically analyzes dirt and throws it out. And so the kid doesn't have to worry anymore. So she takes the thing off, throws it in the washing machine, boom, 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 there's a quick cut, out comes the jumper looking better than ever before, and of course everybody's happy, and it's no work at all involved. All right, you got the spot. You've probably seen spots like that a million times. Well, here's this little squirt. This kid's about, you know, he's about 6 years old, and I never saw a snottier kid in my life. I want to tell you, have you ever, if none of you have ever run into any of these showbiz kids, consider yourself lucky. Here's this kid. He's 6 years old, and he is a real, you know, you just want to kill him, see? And he doesn't do anything. He's not even particularly cute, but he's got a very angry mother. You see, we all know about the stage mother. You've heard of the stage mother. You've heard of the theater mother. You've even heard of the movie mother. You know, the one who insists on her daughter being Shirley Temple and all that. I'll bet you've heard of the commercial mother. Now, that's a phenomenon that only people who have done commercials run into. That there's a whole passel of mothers out there who are dedicated to their kid making it big in the next boomeranging commercial. And they're not worried about the theaters, movies, anything. It's a whole thing about commercials. And so they walk around, these little kids have got big portfolios, and their mother runs ahead of them like an escort, a destroyer escort, see? And here I am, you know, I'm a professional, I've been working around, I'm a writer and everything else. So I come off of this rehearsal of this idiotic commercial, and I sit down, and the mother, of course, is talking. He's just, well, isn't Johnny wonderful in that? Yeah, kid, he doesn't do anything. He just walks out, and they take the jumper off, they throw it in the washing machine, he walks off. He didn't do anything. She said, isn't Johnny wonderful in that? I said, well, yeah, you know, he does a... What do you mean? He's why that commercial is... It sings. By the way, that's one of their words, the commercial sings. She said, that commercial really sings. Johnny, because he's got charisma. He walks out. I said, oh, yeah, really? Yeah. Then came the crusher. She said, you never know. She says, I like Johnny to do all these little commercials. You never know when you might hit a good one. In fact, she says, last year he did 3 seconds on a General Foods commercial, and in less than 6 months he earned $12,000 in royalties and in reruns on that commercial. Gee, six-year-old kid, he wins $12,000 in reruns just for walking out and saying, yeah, it's good. You know, and I'm thinking of endless generations of guys, you know, who died penniless in the gutter after having written Moby Dick. And it was about that time in my life I began to realize that our values are a little strange, you know, really strange. And I don't know where that kid is today, but I'll tell you this. He's probably a multimillionaire, you know, at the age of 12. And he's retired to his island off the coast of Venezuela. And the reruns come in, they come in. And, of course, you know, you get a strange kind of unreal attitude towards things when you're in those commercials after a while. It's an attitude of, how can I put it? It's almost like a guy who... Have you ever heard the song, The Rock Candy Mountain? You know the song? The Rock Candy Mountain. You know, where the trees are made of rock candy and bourbon comes out of the fountains and everything is, it's heaven. And all you got to do is reach up and you get unbelievable stuff. It's a dream song about paradise where money grows on trees. In fact, you don't even have to pick it. It just, the trees shed it on you occasionally. It just drips down. Well, that's the strange attitude guys get in commercials, because what happens is this. Now, most people, when they work, and I say most jobs, most anything you do, even as an actor, when you work, you spend a great deal of time doing it. For example, if you're an actor and you're going to do a film, we'll say, you will spend a year, maybe sometimes more, sometimes less, working on getting the role, negotiating through agents, one thing or another, and then finally when you get the role, it's going to, you know, take me to film. But before that, you will work on your script, you'll read it, and you'll think of the character. In other words, you prepare for this thing. And, of course, people don't think in terms of an actor preparing all this stuff in a film, but they do, you see. And finally, when the film is shot, it is hard work. A guy may work on a film like 6-7 months, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go to bed at 10 that night, exhausted, 7 days a week. It's a rough, hard business. Okay, the rewards are great, but you work for it, you know? All right, this is true of a writer. It's true of a guy working in the accounting department at some insurance place. He works. But the strange thing about the commercial world is you can walk into a studio at, say, 9 o'clock in the morning. The microphone goes on, and at 9:17, you're out of the studio. Now, that's happened to me. 9:17, you're out, like 15 minutes, 5 minutes. You're out of the studio. And then, 1 month later, you get a giant check in the mail. And it's got a note on it. It says, the Amalgamated Fig Newton. And it says, initial payment, Amalgamated Fig Newton. And you can't even remember doing it, because it was only like 3 minutes out of your life. It was just a little thing between meetings. You ran over there and you read this thing, and it says Amalgamated Fig Newton. All right, this check comes, you put it away, and then 1 month later, you get another check. In some cases, it's even bigger than the first one, because now they're playing it on the West Coast, the East Coast, they're playing it in the Midwest, now they're playing it someplace in Paris, they're playing it on Channel 2 in England, the whole bit, and it says Amalgamated Fig Newton, the international rights. And now you get this giant check. I'm not talking about big checks. I'm talking about like maybe $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 even will come in the mail. Well, this, believe it or not, sometimes goes on for years. Every month, a guy will get a check for $2,000, $3,000. And by the end of the year, he doesn't even remember actually doing the commercial. He just knows this check comes in. Now, you multiply that by about 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 or 20 or even 100 accounts, and you got the Rock Candy Mountain. You got the Rock Candy Mountain. And it's unbelievable. I know one guy that in one period, in a short time, you probably don't even know his name, but in about 3 years, this guy, a nameless guy, and not particularly talented, that's the interesting thing about it, that in 3 years, this guy did enough of these particular type accounts that within 3 years of coming to New York, this guy retired. He bought himself a gigantic dairy farm up in upstate New York. And from about the age of 30 on, he is a country squire. And by the way, he still gets the checks. Fantastic. And so when you do these things, you begin to have a peculiar sense of things. It's a strange world, this world of the commercial. You know, I'm wondering when somebody's going to do a movie about that. The guys doing commercials, because they make a great movie, because the scenes are unbelievable. You go up, when you walk up into an agency, for example, they have a thing called, you ever heard of the expression cattle call? Well, a lot of people haven't, Matt. I'll tell you what a cattle call is for you. The cattle call is when a general call is made to all professional types who are known to the agency in the commercials. They'll put out a cattle call, and so you go up there, and you, of course, most guys try to avoid them, but a cattle call is a cattle call. You walk up there, and here, there's a room. It's a strange, eerie sensation. Here's a whole room. It's the ante room, you see, and it's filled with all the characters you see on the commercials. There's that friendly little old lady, you know, the one that that is always talking about the pies. And here's that elderly gentleman that keeps out the country fried chicken. And over here's the one, you know, you see this. It's like some kind of an insane scene out of a curious existential drama, you know. And there's a whole crowd of little kids. And you vaguely recognize all of them, you know. You don't really actually say, oh, yeah, that's the kid that eats the Yankee Doodles. And here they are. These people are all radiating. And they radiate. You see, nobody ever just sits quietly and reads the National Geographic in this waiting room. They're all trying to charm the girl who sits at the desk. She's like the archangel. See, she's got this pink phone. And every couple of seconds, she picks up the phone. She talks into it. She says, is Mr. Stark here? Mr. Stark? Oh, yes, Dick. It's your turn now, Dick. They're waiting. And up goes this announcer, and he goes in. And then a couple minutes later, she calls in another one, and it's a strange, eerie world. He comes back out. He's always radiating total confidence then. Like as if, he walks into the commercial, the copy, he's been reading it. He comes back and says, well, I'll see you guys. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, well, listen, Doug, give me a call, will you? And down the elevator he goes. It's kind of like Harry Hope's bar. You remember the great play? The Iceman Cometh. And you could write a great one-act play in the anteroom of a major agency when, you know, the Jolly Green Giant walks in and the Mr. Clean walks in, the Lady Plumber walks in, all these great folk heroes of our time, and they're all auditioning for an unknown commercial. You never hear what it is. You just know that they're auditioning. And they all sit around in this circle and radiate their charm. And incidentally, they talk to each other in very, very professional commercial tones. And so one may say to the other, and this is a typical line, say, Paul. And Paul looks up and he says, yeah? Say, Paul, listen, that moment in the Johnny Mop spot, that fantastic moment you have when you do this tremendous take, I just want to tell you, it's one of the best things I've ever seen, Paul. And Paul radiates his big moment of the Johnny Mop. And he says, oh, yeah, well, I'll tell you, I did that for Huey, you know. Not, he's a fantastic director. I mean, it's very good. And by the way, Doug, I meant to tell you that moment in the Toronado spot, you know, when you sit there and you put the safety belt on in the Toronado spot, when you look up at that girl, the one with the hair, that is beautiful. Beautiful. Now, these are things which you just take for granted. It's beautiful. I just want to ask you a question. You don't have to tell me. I mean, but you don't have to ask. Was that a first take? I don't think that was written in. Come on, be honest. And Doug says, well, yeah, it was, you know, the thing, I worked on it a lot then when we went in, and it just worked, you know. It just worked. And then somebody else down the line will chip in, you see, and a voice you all recognize these voices and these faces. The voice will say, excuse me, fellas, this is the deep, rich Alexander Scourby voiceover type. Excuse me, fellas, I was hearing you talk about Doug. Is Doug still over at BBD and all YL&Q? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, how are you? Yeah, he's still over there. Well, I thought that he was going to start his own agency out on the West Coast. No, he never did. Well, you know, this is the kind of, this goes on, this whole scene. And, and by the way, the scene goes on almost 24 hours a day. And, like one day, well, I've been part of this, too, you know. I must admit. That's why I know something about it, because I'll never forget walking into Downey's one night. And I go in, you know, Downey's over here on 8th Avenue. It's a theatrical place, see? And all the actors, and one time or another, go to Downey's. I've been going to Downey's as long as I've been in New York. And one of the great moments in my career came when the moment at Downey's. I'm sitting in the booth there, and I'm talking to somebody, see? And just talking away to a friend of mine. When all of a sudden, I get the impression somebody's looking over my shoulder, you know, looking down on me. I look up, and here's this distinguished-looking face. And the man says, excuse me, I don't like to butt in, but I am very embarrassed when I say this, but my wife and I are very, very curious. Are you the... your voice is so fantastically, so tremendously... well, it's so vibrant and so so tremendously familiar. And I think, oh, boy, they're great, groovy. You know, listen, he says, aren't you the one that do those marvelous anti-cigarette smoking commercials? The one with the guys lost in the train and all? I says, yes, that's true. Yes, indeed. He's, oh, hey, Madge, come here. And within 5 minutes, I'm signing autographs. I'm the guy that's on the anti-cigarette smoking commercials. All the rest of whatever achievements I might have done, you know, Nobel Prize, Pulitzer Prize, elected king, nothing. The commercial world is king.